Good morning. I'd like to welcome you to Sunday service on this glorious day. My name is Bharat, and this is Anandi. And I'd especially like to congratulate our yoga teacher trainees who just finished their month-long course, and also our new guests coming for Spiritual New Week. Our reading today from Rays of the One Light is, as Anandi told you, does Satan exist? Truth is one and eternal. Realize oneness with it in your deathless self within. The following commentary is based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. The Bible tells us in chapter 4, the Gospel of St. Matthew, then after baptism was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. To most modern minds, this passage seems quaintly obsolete. Psychologists would say, have said, in fact, that the temptation of Jesus, if it occurred at all, was purely psychological. They call it a projection of desires lurking in his own subconscious mind. The subconscious plays a strong part, certainly, even if not a unique one, in any testing of the spiritual seeker must undergo. The Bhagavad Gita, in dealing with this undeniable reality, quotes Arjuna in the third chapter and then Sri Krishna's reply. Yet tell me, teacher, said Arjuna, by what force doth man go to his ill unwilling, as if one pushed him in that path? Krishna replied, desire it is, passion it is, born of the darkness, which pusheth him mighty of appetite. Sinful and strong is this, man's enemy. Yet even Krishna describes passion as born of the darkness. The fact is, as Paramahansa Yogananda wrote in Autobiography of a Yogi, all thoughts vibrate eternally in the cosmos. Thoughts are universally, not individually rooted. A truth cannot be created, but only perceived. Psychology, yes, but psychology attuned to currents of consciousness that pervade the entire universe, attracted by each of us according to our own personal inclinations. Yogananda, quoted in The Path, said, I used to think Satan was only a human invention, but now I know and add my testimony to that of others who lived before me that Satan is a reality. He is a universal conscious force whose sole aim is to keep all beings bound to the wheel of delusion. We should take pains, then, to attract uplifting currents of universal consciousness and to avoid attracting the negative, which, disease that it is, can infect our thoughts, even while it leads us to believe that our thoughts are purely our own. Thus, through Holy Scripture, God has spoken to mankind. Om, Om, Om.
Good morning. So nice to be with you today with the wonderful topic ahead of us. I'd like to read first from Whispers from Eternity. This is a book of prayers and poems by Paramahansa Yogananda. This is demand to set fire to the forest of darkness. I built a fire of devotion in the dark forest of delusion. Alas, the fire only smoldered. Then thou didst come and set fire to a few of my frailties. That fire quickly spread, consuming the bushes of my prickly desires, my tall, towering vanities, and the thick underbrush of my arrogance. The whole forest of my darkness is blazing, and I behold only thy light shining everywhere. I thank thee, Father, for thy help. Help me thus always. Let me open a path of light for all to follow. don't really like to talk about fire in August at Ananda, but it was such a good reading. Well, this morning, as we've said, the topic, does Satan exist? There were two little boys walking home from hearing a service at church. They were brothers, and they were walking home, and they heard a service at church on the devil. Fairly enthusiastic sermon on the devil. And the one little brother said to his older brother, "What did you think of that Satan they were talking about?" And his older brother said, "Oh, you know how Santa Claus turned out. It's probably just our dad." So when we're little, we do hear these sort of strange things about Satan. And then as we grow up, we kind of go, oh, that was kind of just a superstitious sort of thing. And then we come to yoga and Yogananda, and we find Yogananda saying, "I used to think that Satan was only a mental concept. But now that I have found God, I add my testimony to those who have gone before me and say that Satan is a reality that works consciously and constantly for man's spiritual destruction." So just as we were happy when we came on this spiritual path to discover that God was not an old man with a long white beard, just the same way, Satan is not a little person in a little red outfit with evil intent. These are gigantic forces. And the force of God is a force of pure love. When you have a magnet that's made out of metal, that magnet will attract to itself objects that are made of the same metal. It draws them to itself. It doesn't draw leaves. It draws iron filings, because that's what it's made of. It's made of iron. And in the same way, God is pure love. And we are made of the divine love. We have that same quality within us. And so the magnetism of God's love operates on us and is pulling us constantly and inexorably toward himself. But why aren't we all then just one big ball of divine love? We want to go there. He wants us to go there. It should be no question. It's because in making creation, God realized that that's exactly what would happen. There was no way he could bring creation into existence because everything in him loved every aspect of creation so much it was drawing it all back to himself. So there had to be an opposite force pulling creation in the other way. And so God created Satan. So God is more powerful than Satan. Satan is his own creation. But just as he gave each one of us free will, he also gave Satan free will, unfortunate though it is. And Satan, just as we are, enjoyed being creative, dynamic, extending his territory. And so he created that which magnetizes us toward staying involved in matter, toward getting drawn into negativity, toward seeking material desires, toward trying to fulfill our longing for God through the senses. And so this world was created, and it's a dynamic play. God will eventually win every soul because he's the stronger force, and yet the play goes on. Master put it this way. He said, there's a line. And on one side of the line is God, and on the other side of the line is Satan. And we are on that line. And neither God nor Satan can influence us unless we turn toward them. It's up to us to make the choice. Which way will we turn? Well, I was thinking about this and thinking, okay, on this side, we have pure bliss, pure love, joy, endless light and harmony and peace. On this side, we have darkness, misery, unhappiness, unfulfillment, warfare, suffering of every sort. Okay, so now we stand in the line. We say, well, which will we choose? How hard is that, really? But that's not really the choice as we experience it. There's another choice. It sort of steps down a bit. On this side, we have the willingness to see every single thing in our life as coming to us from God for our blessing, and to accept it with great joy, with great energy, to welcome every person, every event with pure love, and to reach out and express the very best that is in us, to sit long and steadily in silence so that we can commune with that force, to put out a lot of energy to attain that pure bliss that is our nature. And on the other side, we have the tendency to get discouraged, to think ill of ourselves or others, to get into anger, to wish things were other than they are, to find happiness in material fulfillment, not only happiness, but to see that as a be-all and end-all. Okay, so now the choice gets a little bit more challenging, doesn't it? Because this side, the dark side, the satanic side, is a lot more familiar than this enormous force of evil. It's a lot more familiar than that. And it's a lot like getting on a sled on a snowy slope. And it's real easy to take that sled and just go down. No effort is involved. Then we have to take the sled from the bottom of the hill and walk up through the deep snow up that hill again. Okay, so going down is the choice of negativity. Going back up is the choice of going toward God. But we can't even stop at where we were because we weren't at God yet. We have to keep going up, 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 up that snowy slope. But when we get there, the view is a lot better than it was at the bottom. Okay, so that's our choice. And it's not easy, and that's why we're still here. I had an interesting experience in my second year at Ananda. My first year that I was here, 1971, Swami started our first monastery in the community. And by my second year, I had joined it. And whenever we take a positive step, often there's a force inside of us that wants to take a negative step. So there I was in my little trailer at the monastery, and whenever I sat to meditate, there would be this thought, a very strong thought in my head that would say, you're not sincere. If you were sincere, you would be meditating a lot more than you are. And I thought, yeah, that's right. How could I argue with that? It sounded logical. There was no contest. But each time I felt really discouraged by that and really disheartened and very upset. And so that kept happening day after day after day. And I don't remember how long I went on like that, but it was a long time. And finally, I just thought, I don't know what else to do. I've got to make, I called Swami and asked if I could have an appointment. And so Swami, okay. So I went down for my appointment with Swami. He represents me, actually. And when I sat down, this was a big moment in my life. You know, I'd been through this terrible thing, and now I was going to tell Swami about it. My lip was quivering, and I was a little teary, and I was a little, you know, upset about my poor life. And so I sat down, and Swami just stood up, and he walked over to me, and he went like this. Bam! Went back and sat down and said, mosquito. But boy, it changed my energy, okay? I was awake. I was awake. I was ready. I was not teary. And I said, thank you, sir. I really needed that. And so I told him my tale of woe, and he said two words. That's Satan. And I understood what he meant. Get thee behind me. Don't entertain those kind of thoughts, because if you entertain them, they feel welcome and they keep coming around again and again. Okay? So we want to move in this direction, and usually what will happen is that Satan comes to us through our own particular unique personality, Perhaps the tendency to think ill of ourselves is that in that case, perhaps the tendency to be angry, to lose patience with other people, whatever, it will operate through our own personality, but it will be a force that pulls us down and makes us feel bad. Satan doesn't often come in material form, but to the great saints, he sometimes does. And there's a story that Padre Pio told that was witnessed not only by him, but also by his one of his brother monks. A man came to Padre Pio for confession. And this man was dressed in very, very expensively, spoke very intelligently, and he began to confess to Padre Pio his sins. And these sins against God and against man were heinous, horrible, awful, ghastly things. And as the man went on, he would mention a sin, and then he would explain why he had felt that he had to do that sin. And it made sense. It seemed logical. And Padre Pio was kind of baffled as this whole thing went on and on, and he was feeling more and more uncertain what to do, how to change it, no answer. Suddenly it came to him. And he just said to this man with great force, "Say the name of Jesus Christ and Mother Mary." And the man, which was not a man at all, but Satan in form, melted and became just a little plume of smoke with a horrendous odor. So you can't argue with that negative force in yourself. You can't argue with it. It doesn't work that way. You'll always lose. So I wanted another experience that I had. This was happened in my very first year at Ananda. I was working with a man who was very full of doubt and negative. He's long, long gone from Ananda. But thinking in my newfound spirituality that I didn't have any doubts and I could surely help this person. So we had many talks, and I didn't know about magnetism in those days. I didn't understand that just because you're a nice person or a positive person, that a person can be more magnetic in their negativity than you can be in your positivity. That belief in God is not very strong, which was all I had. I'd only been on the path a year. I didn't have enough experience to have faith in God. And so after the course of a couple of months of working with this person and endless little conversations with this person, I was really confused. I was so unhappy and confused. And I saw Swami, and I explained to him what was happening. And he said, "Can you get out of this situation?" I said, "I don't think so right now." And he said, really interesting advice. He said, "Go into silence." And I did. And it was just a marvelous experience, because I was like, I'm not going there anymore. I'm not arguing with that negativity anymore. I'm withdrawing pranayama. I'm bringing my energy within myself. And in myself, I began to get my strength back and to move on. And as I say, the man left soon after that. But it was a good lesson in how do you challenge that negativity. Master tells a delightful story about a woman who was about as negative as you could get. Her name was Miss Kalaha. Kalaha means argument, I think. And she was mean, and she was selfish. And when she died, she went straight to hell. And when she discovered that she was in hell, she began to wail and wail. And Yama, the Lord of Death, for some reason took pity on her. And he came to her and he said, "Miss Kalaha, isn't there anything you've done in your life that could be considered good? Any good deed you've done, even one?" And she sort of scratched her head and thought back on her life and wasn't seeing anything. So I said, "Yes, I did. One time I bought a bunch of carrots, and I was about to eat the whole bunch when I discovered that one of the carrots had a worm in it. And so there was a starving man, a beggar near me, and I gave him that wormy carrot. And I believe I told him that he could eat the good part, but not to kill the worm." And Yama said, "Okay, that'll do." He said, think about that carrot. And she did, and the carrot materialized. He said, grab a hold of that carrot, and that carrot will take you to heaven. And that carrot began to rise, and Miss Cullhow was holding onto it with all her might, and she was rising with it. But a lot of the other sinners down there on the floor of hell saw what was happening, and one grabbed a hold of her foot. As so she was going up, he was getting pulled up with her, and then somebody else grabbed a hold of the other guy's foot, and he went up, until finally there was a chain of 100 sinners, each holding on to the foot of the other, being taken to heaven by Miss Cullhow's carrot. But Miss Cullhow, her true nature was mean and selfish, right? And she felt this tug on her foot, and she looked down, and she saw that 100 sinners were taking advantage of her good fortune and her carrot. And she didn't think that was right. And she didn't want those people to have any good fortune because it was her good fortune. And so she started to kick her foot and shake off the people who were holding on to her. And in the process, she let go of the carrot. Okay, and so they all, 101 of them, fell back on the floor of hell. And there are two morals to this story that Master gives. The second moral of the story is that if you're a mean and selfish person, you're always going to end up not coming to a good end. But the first moral of the story is the most important, and that is that if there's anything good in our life, that's what we want to focus on. Doesn't matter how small, that was a pretty pitiful good deed she did. But by focusing on it, she was focusing on the light, she was focusing on positivity, and that's what lifts us. Not a litany of our faults, but focusing on what's good. In the Rubaiyat, explained, Master has the most beautiful passage that I looked for a long time yesterday and could not find, but I will have to paraphrase it. Basically, he says, no matter how dark your tests are at this time in your life, look for a sliver of light, the tiniest sliver of light, and focus on the sliver of light. That is what will take us toward freedom. No matter how small, focus on that. Some time ago, Swami Kriyananda was in Hawaii with a husband and wife. And the wife is a devotee of this path and has a very deep and beautiful soul. And her husband is very much a materialist and very much a scoffer at spiritual things. And so Swami came to their house and immediately greeted the husband, seeing, as he does in everyone, the divine child in him, greeted him as an old friend, and began to have very lovely conversations with him, always seeing the goodness in this man. And the man asked him lots of questions, all of his sort of doubtful questions about the spiritual path and so on and so on. And Swami gave him the most wonderful answers. And over the course of the days they were together, they became great friends, thick as thieves, just really buddies. And the wife was watching this, and she thought, you know, my husband's not that nice of a person. I'm afraid he's kind of pulling the wool over Swami's eyes. Maybe I better just tell Swami what he's really like. So she went to Swami and she told him, you know, a few little things that maybe he hadn't realized about her husband. And Swami just looked at her, Swami just looked at her very, very sweetly. And he said, I know that. But I choose not to see it. And that was the truth. He just it wasn't in his mind at all. He only saw the goodness in this man, and of course that brought it out. So that's the truth about the way God sees us. He knows it all. He knows all of the darknesses within us, but he chooses not to see it, but to see us as his own children of light. And that's what we want to remember and to live in. Master said something so beautiful that I have repeated to myself many times. He said, I don't ask you to overcome temptation. I don't ask you to overcome temptation. I just ask that you resist it. Isn't that wonderful? So it's all in our favor. All we have to do is do our best to try. And I'd like to end by reading something that Master wrote, a letter. Some of you are familiar with it. But just meditate as I read this. You must never lose courage. Divine Mother sent me to pilot you out of the clouds of your mind. Everybody's difficulty is different, and he or she has to win that test of karma and Divine Mother. Overcome all by constant inward calling on God and utmost devotion in words, thought, action, and obedience to Guru. Your troubles, I do not mind. I will never give up my job about you. Never for a moment identify yourself with momentary flashes of error. Do not become discouraged and tired, but ever be interested in working for Divine Mother. A smooth life is not a victorious life, and I will give you lots of my good karma so you will get through. I will not only ever forgive you, but ever lift you up, no matter how many times you fall. Keep unceasingly trying to conquer. Not only will I invisibly help you, but visibly through many here. I am not building a mansion for you or giving you riches which will perish, but I am making an imperishable home with all riches in my Divine Mother's mansion. Amen.
Brother, I've a faint suspicion you and I've been led astray.